Is there a problem?
No. There's no one on duty here, and we're getting some very strange readings from the magnetic containment field.
The field is deteriorating. Contact the captain immediately. I am initiating red alert.
Hey everybody, welcome to Commander Cast, Season 10, the season finale. My name is Calvin, I'm also known as Captain Resident on the internet, and in case you're wondering, it's basically just going to end up being me, because I know that you usually have William come on and tell you all the various things about the show and the date and stuff like that, and in case you're interested, we are recording August 8th of 2013. But currently his computer has exploded due to the amount of awesome Commander Cast content that it's been containing for a period of time. So, we're now actually kind of relying on me to attempt to try to do this, and chances are this may come out sounding like crap. But on the bright side, at least this time, I'm not going to be going into this completely alone. This week I've brought on two guests, and our first guest is Mr. Cassidy Silver. Cassidy, introduce yourself to the people out there in case they don't know you for some random reason or not.
Yeah, if you've just been listening to this season of Commander Cast, you probably don't know who I am. I'm Cassidy. I write for TCG Player, just Commander. We were doing off-color cast until recently. I'm pretty sure that's over. And, also got a book, www.sun-snuff.com, and opening a store in Chicago. Gamers Link, and that should be opening in later August, actually. Everything's going pretty good right now. So, a lot going on for me, and that's about it right now.
All right, well, there was our first guest for tonight, and our second guest is a Commander Cast writer, kind of a Commander Cast regular, and also the co-host currently of another show that you'll be able to find on our site, and it's Mr. Eric B. Eric.
Hey, guys. So I was going to come on. I was going to talk about my new podcast and pimp that on the site because I was really proud of it. But then Cassidy showed up and totally blew me out of the water. And now I feel inferior and like I'm accomplishing nothing with my life. So I think I'm just going to go and like start doing stuff. Apparently, I need to catch up to this guy who has written a book and is opening a store. What?
Yeah. I saw some albums recorded from back in the day, if we're really talking about all the stupid shit I've done. But, no, new podcast is cool. That's something. I mean, our podcast is over, so.
If it makes you feel any better, Eric, like, me and Cassidy were, like, blogging at the same time, and as far as I can tell, he's basically winning that race. We've gone from, like, bloggers to him writing on a major site to us both being on the same podcast as guests, and then us both being on the same podcast again as guests, and now I'm the co-host of this podcast, and he's going on and basically said to hell with this podcast stuff and just open up his own store.
Yeah, that's how I roll.
So, like, you know, currently Cassidy's winning.
Well, Cassidy, congratulations, man. That's really awesome. I'm proud of that.
Thank you. Yeah, that's actually why I'm bringing up the what people want out of the game stores, so I can get some ideas from other people.
Don't be in the people did our segment too early.
Oh, yeah, right. I forget. we're on a real show this time. I forget.
Yeah. Apparently.
But so this is actually going to be the last episode of Commander Cast again, right? Because the next season's going to have a new name or what?
What's going to end up basically happening is, since we're doing this, let's just go into the show announcements. Show announcements. Each come back to Commander Cast in roughly 3 to 4 weeks, I believe it is, because this is the season finale of Season 10. We take a seasonal break every once in a while in between the seasons, and when we take that break, we go off, refill, recharge, rejuvenate, take rest, give the family some much-needed love and affection, and then we come back completely rested with more Commander content, which you can then check through on Mondays through Fridays with writers from the various people on our site. next season, yes, it is season 11. Commander Cast will be going under a new revamp. We will be receiving basically a new site look, but we'll still be the same name. We tried the concept of trying to change the name, and it did not work, because every name we tried to come across or tried to come up with has either already been A, taken, B, sucked, or C, just did not work out for a random reason. So, yes, even though we will be a slightly different site with different type of music and different images and maybe even a new crew of mascots, we will still be CommanderCast. And you can still go and listen to us over at CommanderCast.com and over on MTGCast.com. Let's see here. Any other things I need to inform you people about before I continue any further? I'm pretty sure Will is probably still doing that contest for, like, the theme song. I know he's offering $20. If you want to find out about it, you can always email him over at commandercast@gmail.com, or you can, like, maybe comment on the site somewhere.
I need to send a link to my friend's music. I completely forgot to do that.
Yeah, yeah, so I won't be on the... I probably won't have my band on CommanderCast anymore, huh? I guess it's probably time to get rid of that.
If you're listening to this particular episode, you will realize that none of the original Commander Cast music is here, because I have none of it. But I do have a bunch of different music that I have on my phone, so chances are you're going to be listening to a lot of different rock music and probably something from a different group somewhere or another.
You should talk to Chris, man. He'll have all the stuff from Off Color. You should totally have the Into the Red Zone music on here.
I have the Red Zone theme song on my thing, but I'm not going to use that. I've actually kind of enjoyed playing around with the various songs that I've got here.
That's so good, though.
Maybe I might, like, throw a snippet of it in here somewhere.
All right.
Just to kind of just have it in there. Like, probably, like, right about, like now. All right, people. Calvin, also known as Captain Red Zone.
We're coming for you! We take what we want
into the red zone.
Swag. We coming for you.
Swag.
We take what we want
into the red zone.
Coming for you.
You know, because that's the good part about being editor here. I actually have the option to throw whatever I want into the show.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to do what I can to cut back on the cursing this episode, because I know the Commander Cast tries to do what we can to try to not curse as often, but chances are you're going to hear a few swear words here and there. So let's see here. This week we're going into the community segment. We have another strategy segment, and we have another technology segment. The community segment is going to be us talking about what do you want from a store in your local LG. The strategy segment is something we'll talk about once we get there. It's usually involving saving people and the various reasons on why or why not. And in honor of our fallen off-color cast member, who you will be hearing probably later on in the show if he happens to send me the music or link, Christian Reno, we're doing a bad card segment. So if you kind of want to hear us talking, stay tuned and we'll be right back after we go into the next segment.
Community segment, we are going to talk about what Magic players look for in a card shop. You know, we're going to basically talk about personal likes and dislikes, maybe things that you wish you did see or things that annoy you about it. And I believe the home version was related to this, so hopefully we'll have our boy Christian talking about it later as well. Background for it basically is, I'm opening the game store. It's coming pretty soon, and I want to be a little more EDH focused, just because there's a lot of competition in my area in Northern Illinois, Chicagoland area. There's like, Jesus Christ, there's probably at least like 30 stores within like a 50 mile radius here. So, I mean, no one's really doing the Commander thing as much. And, you know, this is Commander Cast. This is where Commander players come to listen, come to congregate and all that. So I'd like to hear what everyone has to say so we can make a pretty good community for EDH players. And with that, I'm just going to pass it over to you guys to get your likes and dislikes. I guess we, I don't know, are we going to do the queue thing? I haven't done Commander Cast in a long time.
Eric, do you feel comfortable doing the cue, or do you just kind of want to just do it free-balling like the way we're doing now?
I think that we've got a good rhythm with how we're going now. I don't think we need to bother with the cues, unless that'd be easier for people. Like, if someone's in the middle of a rant and you want to, like, line up for your next thing, then you can hit the cue just so people know, but I don't think that we need to use them.
Okay, all right, I'm totally done with that, so that sounds good.
All right, so this Commander Cast is going completely OCC style.
Gotcha.
All right, so go right ahead. Eric, you got anything you want to toss in there?
I got a story for this, actually.
Sweet.
I'm going to give you the name of one store in my area. It's a store I frequent, and I'm going to plug it because it's an awesome store. And it's the Comic Book Shop. It's shop is spelled S-H-O-P-P-E on Bank Street in Ottawa, Ontario, in the frozen wasteland of Canada. If you come, bring a scarf. But it's a good store. It's a really nice store. They just did a basement like redo, so they have plenty of room for people to play Magic. They host weekly Commander events. They have a healthy collection of singles, but they don't have like every single, like it's not like Star City Games level inventory. And they have a lot of product. Like they always have lots of boosters and any kind of premium product coming in. They have that. And that's where I go to play. Now, I'm going to tell you about a store that I'm not going to name, but anyone in Ottawa is going to figure out who I'm talking about pretty quick. I'm just going to say it's Barney's Bad Bookshop. So Barney's Bad Bookshop is a store that is at least equal in size to Comic Book Shop in terms of space to play, probably a little bigger. It doesn't have as great a location, but what it does have is every single almost. Like they have so many, they have Star City Games level of inventory, and they have even more premium product than the Comic Book Shop. They have incredible amounts of inventory, and whenever someone like really needs a particular card in Ottawa, that this place tends to be where you would look. Now, the reason I don't play there is because they have broken the one most cardinal, sacred rule of any store or retail location ever. And that is that even though they have as good a space, and even though they have a wider selection of product, they have the worst customer service you will ever see. Like, if you aren't, like, a friend of the people who are already working in there, and you walk in, you get, like, a stink eye if you ask for singles. They almost give you trouble for coming in and asking for singles. The first thing they'll do is be like, did you order online? And they'll just be like, well, no, if I was ordering online, I'd order from Star to my house, and then I wouldn't have to go to a Star in the first place. They aren't out-and-out rude. They don't insult you or anything. Well, yes, no, they're rude, but they don't like insult you. They don't cross a line or anything. They're just unpleasant to be around, like, which is kind of weird. You're like, you're working in a card shop. You should be happy as hell. You're working in a game store. Like, but these guys are permanently grumpy, and they will always, and they push that back onto you, and they're very snarky, and they always look like you are inconveniencing them. Whereas the Comic Book Shop has incredibly friendly staff. If you are a regular there, they treat you like royalty. If you're not, they still welcome you with open arms. They're always kind to you. They have people who are specialists on, like, every part of the store there, like, whether it's comics or magic or whatever. And they're always very nice and very willing to talk to you about it. And that makes the difference, to me. Like, it's one of the biggest things is that you can't, ultimately, if you're starting a card store, you have to remember that it's still a store. And the basic foundations of any kind of retail business are still there. Customer service always comes first, because a happy customer will come back.
Yeah, I totally agree that a big part of it is customer service, because, you know, since we decided that we were going to open this store, you know, I've been going to other people's stores and just seeing what's up and stuff. And, you know, like, guys that just aren't friendly, like, you don't learn their name, which I think is, like, I'm not good with names anyways, but I'd like to know the names of the dudes at the card store I go to a lot. You know, you see them all the time, and they just, like, you know, they just, like, you're, like you said, you're working in a card store. Why aren't you smiling, you know? I guess it's just people always find some problem. Like, oh, my boss won't let me do this, and they don't pay me enough and stuff like that. But definitely a big thing is that customer service needs to be there, and that's going to be something that we're really focused on, because we're, you know, We're the EDH. That's kind of the more casual thing. And I actually wonder, in the one that's, so the guys that, like, only do the online orders, are they big, like, tournament? Do they have a lot of big tournaments at that store?
Actually, they do. They have a lot of big tournaments at that store.
Yeah, that's what it, because we have a place like that out here called Pastimes, which is, like, I don't know if other people have heard of it, but it's pretty much, like, the hugest one in the area by far. And they don't have singles, really, except for, like, a few. And they're always like, just order them from online, like you mentioned. And that's because these guys are, like, they have so much space, and they always do tournaments, so I think, and pretty much they don't anything besides Magic, so.
No, you misunderstood what I was saying. They don't tell you to order online from someone else. They have a service online where you can go on and pre-buy the cards, then
right.
You go in to pick them up.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm talking about, too. Like, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because they have just boxes of it everywhere, and they're like, I'm not going to look through them. I'm too busy. It's like, well, I mean, I just want this one card. It said you had it. Like, no, I mean, order them online so we can get them aside for you first. And it's just like, well, that's nice. I'm just going to leave now, you know? So,
yeah. I'm sorry that I made you do your job.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that is really important, and it's really important to be, like, outgoing. I'm pretty shy a lot of the time, so I'm going to have to work on that, but getting people that are just grumpy, it doesn't make any sense to me, you know? Like you said, it's like, I'll just go someplace else if you guys are going to be snarky, and you know, it's like, I'm going to spend money on your cards that are overpriced. I mean, come on. Magic is pretty much a big scam when it comes down to it. So, I mean, come on, guys. At least have a smile, you know.
And then another, like, big thing to remember is that if it's a card store, if it's somewhere that people not just are going to be revisiting to buy stuff, but are going to be sitting around and playing in, you really don't want an atmosphere where people are, like, grumpy. If you've got, like, one grumpy salesperson, that can poison the atmosphere of the entire place. You want some place that people feel welcome and people feel like they want to come back, and like just a place that they don't. You should never have a place that they're just like, oh, I don't want to go there because I don't want to deal with like person X.
Yeah.
You don't want that environment when you're setting up a store.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes it could be like one of the regulars that are annoying, and like there's not much you can do about that as much, but like when someone works there and they're the ones that are bugging you, that's when I've had that kind of similar situation where it's like, I don't want to go there because that guy didn't work there, but he ran the tournaments, so it's like, oh, I can't go to Friday Night Magic without dealing, you know what I mean?
Because nobody wants to be the guy who has to deal with the one guy that sets the story as always being a jerk.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, you're getting paid to be there, too. I don't, I understand that you might not want to be at Magic that day or something like that, but, buddy, you're not at Magic. You're at work. You're being paid to do this. Dealing with customers is your job. Someone is paying you their business's money with the expectation that you're going to deliver a certain quality of service, and you are not meeting that standard.
All right, Calvin, well, what about you, man? I know you've talked about your LGS every once in a while, so what's going on? What's your favorite part about it? What needs to change? What's going on?
As far as my local LGS, a couple of things I personally would like to actually see from a game store are, one, diversity. I kind of like the idea that, yes, it does have Magic content in it, and it does do magical things involving this particular game that we all know and love, but I get sick and tired of the concept that every time I walk in here, it's always standard. Or it's always draft, because that's what we do. Every time we have a Magic tournament or a Magic event, it's always going to be this event. And sometimes I kind of prefer the idea of, like, walking into the shop and be like, oh, well, what day are we doing the limited? Which day do we do draft? Which day do we do standard? Do we have a modern night? Do we have a day where I can come in and play Commander? If I actually felt like putting together and actually getting the bankroll to make a Legacy deck, could I potentially come to your shop and throw down with some, like, $3,000 cards? And usually most shops are just, well, most of the shops that I've actually gone to have learned to divide things up in between various things, you know. There'll be the times where they actually have it set up where there'll be a board or like a flyer that tells you what events go on what nights. And they'll have like, this is the night we play Magic Standard, and this is the night where we play Yu-Gi-Oh, and this is the night where we have our Warhammer coming in. And here's the night where we have like just regular casual games or something like that. And these are days where we have it. And one of the shops that I used to go to, which is currently gone, but it's not forgotten. Reality's Edge used to have a whole monthly calendar, like, right out in front next to the entrance door. So once you walked in the shop, you could literally see everything that was going on in that shop for the next 31 days. Because of the way they had it set up, it's the, if you realize that there was no commander coming in or there was an empty day, you can always come in and make, like, a request. Like, hey, I noticed that on the 21st, there's nothing really major. There's no pre-releases and you don't really have anything. Is it possible we could probably set up, like, a tournament there or something? And if you can get enough people at the shop to actually, like, you know, kind of like a petition. Not really a petition, but kind of a petition. If you can get enough people to come into the shop to convince them that they could actually get people to come in on the 21st for that tournament, then, yeah, they would hold it for you.
I was going to say, the store that I was plugging earlier, the comic book shop, has a very similar thing. It's all set up monthly, and they have every week. They have, like, the same or similar schedule week to week, but it's all, like, Friday night is F&M, Sunday is the Commander Tournament. I think they have, like, a HeroClix or Miniatures night as well. I know that they have a Modern Tournament night, too. Like, they break it up, and that's really good.
Yeah, I like that idea. I think that most of the local game stores I've been to, they either just have it, like, set out by the week, or they'll, like, put together a schedule, but they'll always break it, you know? So, like, that's actually the opposite of good, right? Where it's like, oh, yeah, we're not going to do that anymore because, you know, X reason or Y reason. So I could see how doing a whole month of schedule would be sweet. And actually, that'd be easier for the game, like the game store owner, too. You know, just setting it out by a week, you know, you don't have to worry about anything. Oh, yeah, I remember what's happening now in 2 weeks. I don't have to worry about it. And what Calvin said, too, about the petition and having days open for people to come and look, that sounds like an awesome idea. I really like that a lot.
The other upside to a monthly schedule as opposed to a weekly schedule is that it makes it easier to plan, like, special occasion things. For example, the Commander tournaments at the comic book shop are one-on-one tournaments. And for a long time, that's all they were. They were one-on-one tournaments. But now, because they were able to run a monthly schedule, it was very easy for the guy who runs them to just roll in the concept that, yes, these are still one-on-one tournaments, but once a month, we're going to have a special event called the Gauntlet. And it's going to be on our usual Commander Day, and it's going to be a Commander tournament, but instead of a one-on-one, it's going to be a four-player free-for-all, followed by matches where it's two teams of two, and then followed by a match where it's a one-on-one.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, it allows you to... It's a lot easier to work in, like, special occasion type things when you can look at your entire schedule for a month and be like, okay, well, this is what I want to go here, and we can make room for it because I'm looking at the whole month, and if we have three other one-on-one Commander tournaments this month, then it's okay to have one night for this Gauntlet.
Yeah, and one of the other things I've come to realize, the main thing about one of the better parts of it, actually, is the fact that since it goes out for the whole month, that during months when they have holidays, you can actually kind of, like, see if they're doing anything special on that holiday or if they're just closing the shop up. Like, say, for instance, like, if it's in July and you're not going to be there because you're going to be out drinking and celebrating, whatever the case may be, at least you know the shop's not open on the 4th.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's days where it's like, where there's months where it'd be, like, October, and they actually have the option to be like, well, since it's October, we've decided we're going to try to have a nice little Halloween theme tonight. On this day, near the end of the month, like, say, the 26th or the 28th or on October on Halloween, you actually can come in and we have, they can have pre-set up, like, various things like zombie towers, zombie gauntlet decks, and they can, like, say, like, if you're going to play in this tournament, you have to build a deck that's horror-themed or something like that, and people can kind of, like, see ahead of time what's going on there. And in the shop that did this, actually, on that night, they was, like, you could, like, pre-register for events and stuff. And if you pre-registered for events, it would give them the money to buy things like wings and pizza and stuff like that, because they'd be open, like, all night until, like, midnight or whatever the case may be. Sometimes they'd be open later, and they would just, like, lock the door, quote-unquote, but you could still kind of, like, come in there. And not to say that there would be alcoholic substances, but the things that would happen at a certain point in night when the store is no longer officially open, it's just kind of a playroom.
Yeah. BYOB, right?
Yeah, for those of you who understand what I am actually saying,
wink, wink, nudge, nudge, say no more.
But yeah, so it was nice. It was nice to actually know, like, you know, like, hey, when this holiday comes around, this is what we're doing. Or you can at least know not to waste your time to try to come up to this area on this holiday because we're not open.
Yeah. Here's the other thing. Like, my local game store in DeKalb, because, you know, I moved into Chicago last week. So I'm back in Chicago. But my local game store in DeKalb was a new game in town, and those guys were awesome. And they were closed one day a week, though. They were closed on Monday, I believe. And they had later hours on Tuesday. You know, I'm sure it's because they, the staffing and electricity and all that stuff. But how do you guys feel about a store not being open one day, or it, like weird hours? You know, not opening till 5. You know, 5 to like 12 or something like that. Like, how do you guys feel about that?
I personally have no real issue with like weird hours for a store. I have no real concerns about like a store that's not open one day during the week, because I know that everybody kind of needs to have at least a day off. I mean, I still understand it is a working schedule. I mean, this is my little fun place, but someone still has to go home and have a moment where they can actually feel like they don't have to be at work. Because most of these shops usually only have like about maybe 2-3 people working, if that. Usually they need that like day that's technically closed so they can come in to restock and refill or take care of large events or things of the such. You know, it gives them prep time to prepare for like the upcoming week.
I will say that it is a bit of a turnoff for me when stores have like one day a week where they're steadily closed. Just because it, from a business practice point of view, it's a day that you aren't making money. So if you want to shut down your store on a day, you better make sure that it's going to be a day that you weren't going to like pay off the staff who were working there anyway.
Right.
I'm much more prone to accepting like stranger hours. Like I it took me a while to get used to the idea of, I'm like an early rise hard worker kind of guy. So it took me a while to get used to the idea that like, most stores don't open till like 11 or 12 around here. Like they don't generally open until, I'd say 11, I think, is when the comic book shop opened, 11 or 10. And I was just like, wow, they aren't opening the doors at 9. And then I realized like they don't have customers, so there's no reason to do it. But yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the whole we're closed one odd day, because you're going to have that time that people don't know, because they're the people who only come in for the EDH tournaments on Tuesday or whatever. And then they just realize, oh, tomorrow's the EDH tournament. I didn't realize I'm going to go in and get this card that I can test for my deck. They're going to make the trip out there, then they'll knock on your door, and then they're going to be like, why aren't you open? And look down and see closed Mondays, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's not a fun thing. I would much rather a store have, like, strange hours, but be open every day.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fully understandable. I mean, I could easily see that. At least that way you know that whenever you get there, you can be like, oh, I'm just here too early, or I'm paying by too late.
Mm-hmm.
But at least, you know, it feels more like the, oh, they just, apparently they don't want my money on Mondays.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I always felt like that, too. It's like, I need my card now, so I don't really know how to deal with this situation. I don't really care what your guys' problem is, but you need to be open.
Yeah.
That's all.
Because that's the one thing that never changes, right? It's just like, sometimes the stores are thinking, well, if we aren't going to be open, or like, I'm sure that Barry's Bad Bookshop, I'm sure, is constantly being like, I just realized I don't know what the owner's name is, so I really hope his name isn't Barry. But if you're at Barry's Bad Bookshop, they kind of have this attitude that, like, well, we can say whatever and do whatever we want, because you have to come to us to get your cards anyway. And it's like, no, man, I'm going to get the cards no matter what. I'm just not going to get them from you.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to be a jerk and give me trouble because I came in and asked for some cards, then I'm just going to go elsewhere. And if they don't have it in the city, I'll order it online before I give money to you.
Well, it's time for us to cut this segment short right here. And after we're done, we're going to skip this straight into the CommanderCast home version.
Hey, childrens, it's that time again. Time for the CommanderCast home version. This week's question, what do you want from your local game store? On the Twitter end, our boy Stevie B says lots of drafts firing, lots. Kaka says, a place that will tell me and back me when I need to fix our metagame by playing blue. And Johnny Butt says, an LGS that makes an FNM at Commander Night. On the Facebook end, our boy Igor says, I want a local LGS for starters. Our boy Luis says, my card shop already does the only thing I'd want. Let us play there for free. Tournaments draw harsh games, and I'm just looking to have fun with people I already know. Our boy Chad Steele says, singles, sanctioning, and snacks. Triple S there. Christian says, I know they need to make a profit, and I understand that without complaint. That being said, I would love to see reasonable prices on limited product at, like, From the Vaults and Commander's Arsenal. And our boy Eve says, a candelabra of Tonos for less than $200. There you go, childrens. That was the home version. You want to be on it? We post a question on the Facebook, on the Twitter. Answer it. Be awesome. You be on it. Later.
Now that we're done with the Commander Cast home section, home version, home section, section 8 for your home. It's now time for us to take this beast and go off into the strategy segment.
Oh, I did want to mention that because I live in Chicago now and my wife doesn't have to be out as long, that's the reason I'm doing this Commander Cast episode. I haven't been able to do Commander Cast in a long time because you guys always record it like before I can get to it. So this has nothing to do with the fact that Willie's not here. Just want to say it.
Okay, everybody, welcome to the strategy segment. It quite literally took us an extremely long time to get here. But, yeah, this week we're going to be talking about the concept of the distress call. And for those of you that don't know, the distress call is that moment where a player at the table, for some reason or another, is in a really tight spot. And, you know, they really need help for one reason or another. So it's the guy who's sitting in the corner of the table who's kind of mana screwed and he's just getting pounded on by some guy who happens to have a tokens deck. Or the guy who's like, oh, come on, guys, let me at least get a chance to insert random card or random type here so he can try to get into the game. And for the strategy segment, we're going to be discussing the pros and cons of whether or not it's worth it to be the captain save a player and jump in and actually try to help this guy out. Or do you just sit back and just watch him die? Because, you know, technically, he is still an opponent. So, one of the main reasons why I brought this up is because I kind of like the idea. Like, I've seen this happen plenty of times. Plenty of times. Where, you know, and sometimes it's even happened to myself. Where, you know what? Luck hits you. It's not going your direction. Completely screwed. Either because you don't have the creatures. Or because you don't have the mana. Or it's because you have creatures and mana, but your deck isn't doing what you need to give you the proper color combinations to do what you want. Every once in a while, you'll be stuck sitting there with a Sarah's Ascendant in your hand and no white mana and just a field full of mountains. And you know what? It does kind of just suck because, you know what, if you could only get one thing and you're sitting there getting pounded away on and getting beaten into submission, that by the time you stabilize, you're pretty much already out of the game. It's the moment where you realize, like, yeah, you have cards in hand, you have this and the third, but now that you're quote-unquote getting into the game, Johnny Combo play over there has already put the pieces of his big combo together, and he's about to go off once the turn goes around. And he's at 48 life, and you're down to 4, and there's nothing you can really do to stop this. I'm going to just quickly toss the question out there to my co-host, to my guest host here, and find out what they think. Do you guys think that there's any reason to jump in to save a player? I know Cassidy's opinion, but you know, let's start with Eric. Yeah, sure. Go with Eric. Go ahead, Eric.
I actually will jump in to save people most of the time, mostly because you're able to generate like a certain social expectation for what people know about you. Once you have played with them a lot. So when you play with the same group over and over again, even though they're technically an opponent, it's nice to have another player in the game who is indebted to you and who is going to try and help you out. And while it's possible that they could turn around and stab you in the back, I've gone to great pains in my local group to establish that I'm not someone who responds well to betrayal and chicanery. So I will, for example, someone once, I played a Dryad Arbor turn one once, and someone hit it with a go for the throat to basically sinkhole me a turn behind everyone else. And I ended up in that game destroying every one of their permanents with an Eldrazi and then leaving them alive and just blowing up their permanents as they played just to punish them for what they did. I'm like, you don't get to die. You die last.
I am God.
When Gotham lies in ashes, you have my permission to die.
Oh, man. Yeah, I see what you mean when it comes to, like, creating, like, positive social connotations and stuff. And that's funny that you're so wrathful when people betray you. Like, I mostly play with my family, so, like, there's more baggage than that. Like, coming to, you know what I mean? Like, we already have, like, relationships before it, so it doesn't really matter who screws who in Magic, because it's like, it's all been done before, I guess, you know? But when I play other people, I usually try to be really laid back about everything. Like, I feel like when I'm playing against, like, people I haven't met and it comes to EDH, I should try to be a nice guy, because I tell them about my article, and if I'm a dick, then they're, like, just gonna flame me. So, yeah. Like, that's the not benefits of, like, being out and about with the internet and stuff. But in general, like, if people are, like, getting straight to the thing, if people are asking for help and do I give it, like, it depends if it's beneficial for me in the game. In the casual game, and if it's getting someone you just met, or, you know, if they're going to have to sit there for a while if you knock them out right away, you know, that sucks. But at the same time, if it's just, like, if the game's going to be ending soon, or if they're just going to sit there and watch anyways and they'll get just as much enjoyment, they don't care, you know, knock them out. Especially if they're like, oh, well, next turn I'm going to, like, wrath the board, but if I die this turn, then I can't save the board, you know, that kind of thing. Like, that's when I'll really get my ears perked, is when people start making, like, in-game deals. Like,
that's, you know, the best way to ask for help.
Right, exactly. Like, if you're like, help me, and it's like, well, if I help you, what's going to happen? Like, oh, well, I'm not going to do anything, and I'll probably have to be helped again next turn. Like, fuck that. That's just, like, cutting off a limb that's dying. You know what I mean? But if, like, if it's just something like a combo that goes off and kills one player, and, like, you can save them, like, that's different, you know, because they're getting wasted by something they couldn't protect against, that kind of thing. So, you know, maybe there is, like, a little bit of, like, the gallantry, like, protecting a player that's just been getting his ass handed to him all game, that sort of thing. But for the most part, like, if they're just going to die the next turn, why bother? You know, there's a lot of people that'll say anything so that they can try to win a card game, which is weird to me anyways. Like, just take it like a man, and we'll play another game in 5 minutes, you know what I mean?
Yeah, my...
In all honesty, I just imagine, you know, Cassidy's family just going at it like Hatfields and McCoys. He was like, oh, remember that time you stole my sheep? Oh, I'm going to get you for that now. I was like, oh, you dirty rat, I saw what you did with my sister.
Just imagine if more, like, passive-aggressive white people, and you got it more close to it. A little bit more passive-aggressive, where it's just like, where we just...
Yeah, man, that was my land. My bad. It's all right.
Yeah. Like, why would you do that? That doesn't help you at all. It's like, fuck you. Like,
whatever. Yeah. It's not the right play.
Yeah, you didn't.
Just saying.
You didn't bring it.
I don't
to
even know why you did that. I was gonna say, yeah, no, you brought up a great point. When it comes to rescuing people, it's all about context. But if we're talking about asking for help, I don't care what deck you're actually playing. When you're asking another player to save you, you are now playing Gwafa Hazeed, and you have to bribe them in order to help you.
Yeah,
you have to be like, if you save me from that Thundermaw Hellkite, I'll be able to kill his general next turn.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just saying, if you're able to save me from that Thundermaw Hellkite, I'll be able to tuck his general, get rid of it forever. So, you know, if you want to deal with that general later, you can go ahead and let me die.
Yeah, see, but in that particular situation, I can fully understand why you would want to, like, quote-unquote, help him. Because at that mm-hmm. point, it's like, you know, yeah, he needs the assistance, but having his presence can actually potentially take care of something that you really don't have the resources for at the moment. And I would gladly trade, like, a naturalized from my hand to destroy a problem enchantment for him if he's going to turn his Doomblade into a creature removal spell for me. Because one of the things I've actually come to realize about this particular format is I've totally and completely given up on the entire concept of quote-unquote card advantage. I don't care, unless, of course, I can draw more cards than the total equal amount of the cards in my opponent's hand. There's no way I have card advantage, because every spell I use is going to be on one guy or not work on two guys, or it's going to work on two, but it's not going to do anything to this one. And even though I'm going to be doing something to profit myself, it's not really helping me. Unless, of course, I'm dropping down something that can take care of all three players simultaneously, or multiple players simultaneously. And because of that, I've come to realize, like, you know, you have to make those, like, Guapa Hazid moments where, you know what? I've got enough stuff here to keep you alive if you would be more than willing to do something by countering this or preventing that. And those moments I know are going to come up, and they're actually part of the reason why it's like a group social game, because now you're actually kind of talking to the people at your table as opposed to just like a regular 1v1 where you're sitting down just trying to bash the other guy's face in. But on the other end of the spectrum, it's still the there's going to end up being that guy that you're going to do something. And you're going to try to save him. And he's telling you he can do this. And then he's going to try it, and it's not going to work. So you just kind of wasted your time for an attempt to try to do something that was going to be profitable for you, but it didn't work at all. And now you just feel like an idiot because you could have just let him die in the first place and kept your card.
The other thing I'll say about that, though, is that, like, keeping a player alive, even if he isn't able to bribe you with something, even if he's just like, look, I really don't want this guy to be the one who kills me or something like that. If you do have something to keep him alive and you save him, you have essentially gotten rid of one of your opponents, because even though he's technically still playing against you, he's not going to be going at you for the course of the game, so he's not going to be costing you cards during the game, and your opponents still have to expend more cards to kill him. So that's why I will generally save someone, is that I see it as a resource thing. I'm just like, okay, if I make this guy my ally now, by saving his butt, I'm going to buy myself at least 5 turns of loyalty out of him. And he's not going to do anything to hurt me for those 5 turns. He's going to do everything to drain these guys' resources, which gives me an advantage over the game.
So basically what you're saying is you just turn to him. Like, you basically would have, like, if say it was a game with the three of us, you would have, and you do something like that where he was like, Cassidy is now a planeswalker card, and his name is Cassidy, Slave of Eric.
Damn. I don't know about that.
Yeah, but I do it with a smile. I'm just like, no, I'm a good guy. I'm going to help you out. I'm not a puppet master at all. Come on, don't worry about it, buddy.
Just get down on all fours and put this leash on for me. There you go. You see this mask with the zipper on the mouth? Yeah, don't worry. I'll let you breathe. Just put it on.
Come on, Nick. They had it in Pulp Fiction. That's your favorite movie.
I guess you're going to have to wake up Cassidy then.
Okay, so now that we've gone into the concept of saving the guy and reasons for why we went and want to save him, let's see here. Is there anything else we might actually want to toss in here? Because I have no idea how long this segment has actually gone.
What's like a situation? How do you feel when someone saves someone from you? Like, how do you feel when you feel like you've earned the kill on someone and you're moving into the kill, and then another player just comes over and kind of cock blocks you from the kill, as it were?
When they give you the, when they turn around and give you the Feldegriff?
Yeah, basically.
Everyone needs to be nice. Yeah, that's interesting. I don't really mind, actually, because for the most part, I don't really like knocking people out of games unless it's like competitive, because for the most part, it's just a fun game. You know, when there's combo decks and stuff, you try to kill them as fast as possible so they don't win. But when it comes to, like, someone else saving a deck, actually, you know what? It depends. If you're a combo player and, like, someone's saving, like, the deck that's going to turn around and win the next turn, like, that seems, that would, like, it probably make me mad because, like, the priorities aren't in the right spot. You know, if you're saving someone from me and I've been, like, dominating them, like, okay, that happens. But if it's like, oh, I'm going to save this control deck player who's going to take over and play Stasis next turn, like, that doesn't make sense, you know. I will say that a lot of times I play team games, too, so, like, I might not have the best look on this because I'm usually forced to help people a lot of the time. You know, like Two-Eyed Giant and stuff like that. So
yeah, fair enough.
There is that to take into account too. But yeah, I don't know. What about you, Calvin?
In this particular situation, I think it would actually probably rely mainly on how much I've invested in attempting to kill that player. Because a lot of times, I play Red, and Red has probably got one of the worst, like, resources management development in the entire game. Like,
still
if
the
I
best
spin,
color. It's still the best color. I don't even care. It's still the best color.
Look, I'm not arguing that point. I personally tell people all the time, Red is the, quote-unquote, red-headed stepchild to Blue. Yes, it probably is better, but no one cares because Blue is privileged.
Hey,
but
they got Ogre Battle Driver is really, really, really good, so.
Oh my god, Ogre Battle Driver is so good. As soon as Prosh got spoiled, I'm like, I'm gonna play Ogre Battle Driver, then I'm gonna play Prosh and make 6 kobolds, and I'm gonna swing with the 7-5 dragon and a bunch of 2-1 kobolds, and I'm gonna make people cry.
Yep. Yeah, it's
and
like,
then if they block any of the kobolds, you just sacrifice them in the frost to power them up.
Yep, I'm feeling you, man. That's I love that card. I bought like 7 of them. Like, I'm sure I'm going to use all these eventually.
Sooner or later. Yeah. They're all getting spread out amongst decks of various formats.
Yeah.
But yeah, like as I say, because since I play Red a lot of times, most of the times, you know, like, you know what, I don't have that many burn spells. Sometimes I have things that will generate tokens, but I usually have no graveyard recursion outside of maybe something along the lines of, like, Elixir of Mortality or something like that, which I usually don't even count as, like, graveyard recursion. Mm-hmm. And unless I'm splashing with, like, green or black or something like that, you know, once I play this card, that's it. It's done. It's over. On to the next one, because I don't have the resources to waste to try to get this back. So if it's like, say, a player who I've noticed he's doing some type of weird, like, combo, or someone who I've played against before and I've seen this deck and I kind of have an idea where this is going, and I want him gone, and I'm investing cards, and I'm burning, and I'm attacking, and I'm swinging, finally got him down to, like, the 3 life needed so I can just swing in with one last thing and finish him off. But everyone at the table doesn't see it that way. They see it as he came to play, and he's here playing, and for some reason his mana didn't work for him, and he's not doing anything. And yet you're just beating his face in. And I'm trying to plead to them. Trust me on this. This is the right decision. And then someone throws down like a fog, or someone decides they want to kill my guy to save him, and or put out something that forces me to start going after them.
# I'm gonna punch you in the face.
And the next thing you know, it's like, oh, he finally hit his 5th land. Oh, look at this, Child of Alar. Good game, guys. Good game.
Yeah.
Everything's dead.
Exactly.
You ruined it. You blew it up. You animal. Alrighty, time to move on to the next segment.
Yeah, I think this is enough for this particular thing. If you have any questions or comments or anything you want to toss into it, you can always go right ahead and put it down in the comments section. Next, we're heading over into the technology segment where we're going to be talking about stupid cars we love. I've come to realize that whenever we decide to rag on cars for some reason with this group of commander writers and officiates, there's a tendency to pull out red cards.
Welcome to the technology segment of this week's Commander Cast, where we're going to be talking about stupid cards we love, specifically stupid red cards we love. Because we noticed when we were picking out the cards that we all are very, very red players. So we're going to be listing off some of our favorite colors' biggest blunders. So let's go to you first, Calvin. What is your stupid red card that you love?
All right. So since we're going to be kicking this off with me, we're going to go with the stupid red card that I personally love. And it's called Bomb Squad. For those of you at home who are listening and don't even know what it is or have no time to get to a computer, it's a 3 colorless, 1 red, creature dwarf, so 1/1. and has two abilities. The first ability is you can tap it and put a fusion counter on target creature. Actually, technically has three abilities. I didn't even realize that. The second ability is at the beginning of your upkeep, you can put a fusion counter on each creature with a fusion counter on it. The third ability is...
Fusion.
I've got Dragon Balls in my mind. And that's Dragging.
Dragon Balls in... What? What is happening?
I wasn't going to touch that.
So we have three abilities. It's tap, put a fuse counter on target creature. Second ability, at the beginning of upkeep, put a fuse counter on each creature with a fuse counter on it. And third ability is whenever a creature has four or more fuse counters on it, remove all fuse counters from it and destroy it. That creature deals four damage to its controller. Now, I personally kind of like the idea of this card just because I really love the flavor for it. There's a bunch of guys who basically, like, strap bombs to opponents. And as long as they're around, those bombs just kind of have this ticking time bomb where once it gets to a certain number, they're going to explode. And not only do they explode and kill the creature, but the strap happens up and hits the player a little bit, too.
This
card is actually pretty fun, though. But you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and let these guys just rip it apart. Come on, boys.
I was going to say, you know, I didn't understand looking at it why you'd like this card. I'm like, this is way too slow. This really sucks. Until I saw that it was a dwarf.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a 1/1 dwarf. And then I pictured in my head a little dwarf running around strapping sticks of dynamite to dragons and golems and Eldrazi and stuff. And, yeah, that's hilarious.
Not only that, but it's almost like they're hidden time bombs. Like, that's how I always thought of it, because, like, if you have a big bomb strapped to you, you just, like, kind of get rid of it. But this time it's like, I don't even know what's there. So they're like a bunch of, like, Colombian car bombers up in here.
Well, this went in a dark direction quick.
Hey.
Colombian car bombers?
Real fast.
You didn't want to go with Al-Qaeda?
No, I mean, I always really like the story of Pablo Escobar, so I'm usually, that's my go-to.
Fair enough. I like the flavor. I like, yeah, picturing some dragon and it doesn't realize that it's ticking until it's too late and then it blows up, yeah. But, no, Calvin, this thing's way too slow.
It's fun with Proliferate and, like, Doubling Season, too, right? I guess Doubling Season doesn't really help, but I think this card's cool.
No, Doubling Season does.
Well, no, because
if you play Doubling Season, what you can do is that you tap the Bomb Squad and it puts two counters on it, right? But if you do it on your opponent's turn, then it passes to you, then you put two more counters on it, and it dies that turn.
Well,
so it turns it into a one-turn kill.
Isn't Doubling Season only stuff you control, though?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it doesn't work quite as well with Doubling Season, but like, you know, like Contagion Engine or something could be pretty funny to fuse that stuff up. Yeah, this card's cool. I can't fault it at all. I mean, it's bad. Like, you'd only play it in a metagame where, like, you can get away with having a bad creature, but when it comes to being bad, it's pretty awesome and flavorful, so. And that picture's so funny, too, where, like, those are the dwarves that set the bombs, but they're, like, scared. Like, what's going on there? I don't know. They had at least four turns to get away, so they shouldn't be this surprised.
But they were too busy, like, strapping on to other things. So they just kind of like, hey, like, how long has it been since we put that TNT on that last guy? I don't know. I dropped my watch. Hey, Frank, what time is it? Guys, I think we better move, like, now. And then you're just kind of, like, scurrying across the battlefield.
It's that scene where the dragon realizes that he has the bomb strapped to his back and he's looking around and trying to get it off, but it's too late, and you just see the dwarves running away. And then boom in the background.
That epic leap towards the end, yeah.
This card is awesome. It's an action movie all on its own. Yeah, I like this card. I'm giving this card a thumbs up. This card gets bonuses for flavor.
Yep. Thumbs up over here too, Calvin, so. All right.
Yay! We scored one. All right, so
it's
since we've gone
good.
Over... It's not good at all. Don't trust me. I would not... Like, if we were going to be talking about fuse counters, the closest thing I would tell you to do is probably play with what is it? It's an enchantment. It's an aura. I think it's called Incendiary. It's like one mana. It's at the beginning of your upkeep, you put a fuse counter on Incendiary, and when an enchanted creature, like, dies, it deals, like, damage to target creature or player. Hmm. But it's, like, the damage is, like, equal to, like, the number of fuse counters on it. Like, if you're going to be playing around with fuse counters, that's the one I would recommend you do, because it's only one mana. It's an enchantment. You can always get it back with, like, a Sun Titan and just kind of just start sticking it on stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. All right. Well, that's enough about me and my stupid fuse counters. Well, Eric, since you've introduced this segment, and we already know what yours is going to be, and Cassidy kind of was still looking around. I know what you're, but, you know, Eric's had his second, so, sir, it's on you.
Oh, yeah. Go for it.
Me?
Yeah.
Yes, you.
I couldn't figure out between the two of you who was actually going to be going next. Okay, yeah. So, dear listeners, I would like to take you back to a time before Return to Ravnica, when we were still in the horror-themed block of Dark Ascension, and then the Avacyn Restored spoilers started coming out. And then, one day, an article went up posting a preview for a card, and it was a new Planeswalker, and I got very excited. And I saw that it was a new red Planeswalker, and I got absolutely giddy. Then I saw it was a new red Planeswalker that cost two, and I started doing backflips and somersaults. And unfortunately, after they revealed the abilities, I was too busy being excited and doing acrobatics to actually notice that this card is a bit of a stinker. I am talking about Tybalt the Fiend-Blooded.
The most dapper planeswalker in the multiverse.
Okay, so I'm gonna explain the card, what it is, and what I like about it. It's a red planeswalker. I love red. Red is absolutely my favorite color. I find it difficult to play EDH decks that don't have red in it. He costs two. Once again, the cheapest planeswalker in existence. Very, very cool. Now, you'll notice there are now two arts out for Tybalt the Fiend-Blooded. And both arts look absolutely awesome. Tybalt looks like the kind of guy, he's got like the dapper suit on, but he's like totally devilish and crazy looking. He's clearly insane. He looks like the Joker of the Magic Multiverse is what he looks like. And that's awesome. Now we're going to get to the abilities.
The joke part.
Tybalt enters the battlefield with two loyalty counters on him. His first ability is plus one, draw a card, then discard a card at random. His next ability is minus four. Tybalt the Fiend-Blooded deals damage equal to the number of cards in target player's hand to that player. So sudden impact. Good card. And his minus six is gain control of all creatures until the end of turn. Untap them. They gain haste until end of turn. So Insurrection, which is also good. But his plus one ability is so bad. It was so close to being good. And then they put random in there and made it so bad. If they had made it discard a card before you draw, this card would be absolutely playable. And it wouldn't just be playable, it would be fantastic, I think.
Yeah, well, they didn't do that, though. You know, the thing that always bugged me about him is that he's the only planeswalker that can't do more than one ability when he hits the play. Like, this dude has to sit around for two turns fucking over your hand before you can use that minus four ability. And then even when you get there, it's like the players have had two turns to be like, oh, fuck, I'm getting rid of everything in my hand. So it's really, he's really just completely awkward. I don't know his story at all, but he reminds me of a D&D race. So I kind of always wondered if he was like kind of like going to be this tie-in to D&D. I don't know. I don't really pay attention to anything.
It is not.
No, okay.
I know who you're talking about. You're talking about tieflings, right?
Yeah, tieflings, yeah, exactly. He's not a tiefling at all. That would have been awesome.
Not even remotely.
Oh.
But technically, on this card, it doesn't really say, because, you know, when they have the planeswalker ruling, they just kind of slap their name down there. They don't actually put, like, a quote-unquote type, so maybe he could be a Night Marty's.
They talked about how he ended up all half-demon in, like, the flavor and stuff like that. He's not a tiefling,
oh,
unfortunately.
and he's a liar. Who cares? He's actually he's it. Like when they gave him his round, the paper to fill out for, you know, applying for planeswalkerdom, you know, like the job application, you're supposed to fill in and put your, like, name and quote unquote, like, other alternate names you've gone by and identities and race. He just kind of marked down what he wanted. And yeah, like, I mean, really, would you trust anything a guy that looks like this tells you?
Well, he's not a tiefling, but he's not actually a half demon or anything either. He's just a human who's really into LARPing.
Really?
No, I'm joking.
Oh, okay. I do like his. I do like the dual deck art for him a lot with that knife and stuff. He's kind of got this, like, you know, come at me, bro, type thing. It's just too bad that.
Exactly. I was supposed to say.
Yeah, it's just too bad he dies to, like, a beast token. Like, even if you tried really hard. And also, too, I didn't like Romeo and Juliet very much. And every time I see this guy, it reminds me of Tybalt from the Romeo and Juliet, you know, the book and stuff. So it's kind of like, he kind of fails on that aspect for me, where it's just like, God, everything about you just kind of pisses me off, dude.
But as far as, like, Tybalt goes, like, I kind of like the original art just because, like, the fire, of the little bit of, like, cinder and smoke coming out of his right hand, I just kind of imagine that being, like, the card that you discarded at random. It's like, whatever it was, it's completely gone now. There's no wasting time thinking about it, like, no reason to send a letter off to your loved ones. This thing is, you know, fizzled. It's smoke, it's ash, it's dust. It's no longer even applicable to anything. And I do have to agree that if it did discard a card before it did a draw card, it would be better. Even if the discard a card was at random and it was before the draw card, I still would have taken it. Because at least I'd have the chance to... You, what thing is, at least then, you'd have the chance to evaluate your hand. Determine if there's anything in your hand worth keeping. If you had to, like, what's the best... Like, think of it like this. Imagine a hand where you have four cards, and you have to look at what's the best card in this hand. And the best card in this hand is not relevant at this point in the game.
It's turn nine, and it's a Birds of Paradise.
Yeah, it's turn nine, you got a Birds of Paradise in your hand, and, like, two mountains and... I don't know, like some other random card that you don't even need. If the card is random discarded, then, like, yeah, go right ahead. I'll pitch any of these because anything I draw is better than what I've got. Because none of this is anyway. Whereas if it were just like pitch where, but with the way it's now, the way it is now, it's like the, you could draw that card you need, and yes, you do have a 1 out of 5 chance of getting rid of it. But still, there's a good chance you're just going to toss it away.
That's what really screws it. The chance that you, like, the fact that you're going to risk pitching a card that you haven't even seen yet. And the, like, and that's the worst part, too, because then you've essentially milled yourself for one and gotten nothing out of it but another loyalty counter on Tybalt.
Yeah.
It's just, it's not, like, to activate that ability and then have your hand be the exact same after as it was before. It's not good.
Yeah.
It's not good at all.
And also because, like, the one thing is he's too red to drop, so, like, you'd think that he'd be good on turn two, but that's actually when you have more of a chance of losing, like, the, you know, the early game is really important to keep going, so it's like you could end up getting rid of something that was going to keep you going. And in the later game, he actually seems a little bit better, but, I mean, like, at that point, you'd rather pay, like, 4 for him and have him do something more meaningful, you know? So it's like, I just feel like I mentioned earlier, I just feel like he's missed. And not even because of the random discard, but just because of, like, yeah, I guess it is the random discard, and it's just the early game, it just doesn't help as much when you can, like, faithless looting turn one and then flashback faithless looting. Like, that seems like so much of a better plan for the first three turns of playing Tybalt and, like, hoping that you can sudden impact someone eventually, you know? And the Insurrection, it's like, by that point, you might as well just play Insurrection because it'll be much easier on your time and patience, you know what I mean? Sorry.
And sudden impact is a lot less good when you take out the sudden part.
Yeah. Eventual impact.
But eventual impact after a long time of totally destroying your own personal resources. Mm-hmm. All right, so, okay, come on, Cass, let's rank this bad boy so we can move on to the next one.
Thumbs down on Tybalt. I mean, there's only a few things that save him, and it's not even really important to me. So, bad planeswalker, pointless, not fun, sorry. Thumbs down.
All right, I'm personally going to have to go with a thumbs down at the moment, because when I look at a card like this particular one, the only thing that comes to my mind is cards like Dark Depths. It's the card that right now you would never play. It's going to be worth like 5 cents in like a bin somewhere in a box and no one's going to care about. And then, like, somewhere between now and the next one X years, someone's going to print a card from Wizards that's going to make this entire thing completely playable. And then afterwards, next thing you know, it's just going to completely explode in price. And you're going to go like, oh my God, where's all the table? I'm going to realize, nope, it's a mythic rare from a time long forgotten.
I don't know, man. There's a lot of cards that just sucked and then kept sucking forever. So I don't know about that. You know, like,
sir, I have a lot of faith in those cards as well.
Calvin's just got faith.
Calvin's an idealist.
Yeah, really.
There's going to come a
He's
point.
He's the Blue Lantern. He never loses hope. Was I the only one who got that joke?
Yeah, sorry.
I'm a nerd.
Is that a comic book reference?
Yeah, in Green Lantern is willpower. Blue Lanterns are hope.
Oh. Huh.
Yeah.
I don't know that much about superheroes. Oh, yeah, right. Okay.
Alright, so it's on you now, Cass. Go right ahead. Let's see what piece of, like, red, clunking, loving technology you've got for us this week.
Okay, so this card may seem bad for everyone who's ever, like, taken a look at it for a second, but actually, it's sometimes, like, the best card in my Boros decks. And this is Bludgeon Brawl. It's a two colorless red enchantment from New Phyrexia, and it's got a weird text. It says, each non-creature, non-equipment artifact is an equipment with Equip X, where equipped creature gets plus X plus O, where X is the artifact's converted mana cost. So basically the idea is that you pick up, you know, a mana rock, a sentinel flute, and use it to beat someone to death with. And like at first that just seems so dumb. Like, why would you play this in a deck? But, for instance, in my Gisela deck, I played a lot of mana rocks, like, Thran Dynamo, Soul Ring, like pretty much everything. And what happens with mana rocks is that you can basically tap them to equip themselves to people. Tap a Thran Dynamo, and then another colorless, and you're giving a creature plus 4, plus 0. And in a deck like the Gisela deck, which was mainly double strikes and, like, relentless assault type effects, so I'm attacking multiple turns, like, I mean, just consider giving plus 4 to Gisela. Like, that makes her deal 18 damage for a dumb little enchantment, and playing a bunch of mana rocks you're going to play anyways, like Boros, Signet, that kind of stuff. So, like, it definitely seems like a pretty stupid card when you see it, and it is really stupid, and the art is awesome, I will say that. He's picking up, like, something. I can't even tell, but it's awesome.
I think he's hitting him with a mirror.
Yeah, but that wouldn't make sense, because it's supposed to be non-creature. Like, come on. Get to the right. But, it's something. Maybe it's a mirror reservoir or something. I don't know. He's hitting him with something, and, oh man, it's just, this card has been so good so many times, especially if you're playing the Mana Rock. So let's hear what you guys have to say about Bludgeon Brawl over here.
As far as Bludgeon Brawl is concerned, it's one of those cards that when it first came out, I remember like constantly trying to figure out exactly what it meant. Like, what could I equip? I understand a non-creature, non-equipment artifact, but like, what, like, there was like so much talk about like, can I use this for a land? Can I use this for a planeswalker? Can I use this for an enchantment, an artifact? What if it's already an artifact that turns into a creature? What happens then? And, like, all those various random like rule texty things. Mm-hmm. But the only thing that ever really came into my mind was the idea of using this thing and trying to figure out how is it that I can pick Jace up by his feet and beat you over the head with him and do more damage than I would if I grabbed up an entire mountain and smacked you with it.
What? Jace is... It's only if you turn Jace into an artifact, maybe. I don't know.
Jace's ego is bigger than the mountain.
Yeah.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, it's like, it says not each non-creature, non-equipment artifact.
Yeah.
And by non-equipment artifact, is basically saying things that already equipments aren't, that are no longer, are not do not apply. You know, those Swiftfoot boots? No, they don't get this effect. Non-creature. What was it? Each non-creature?
Yeah.
So, where was it? Not Jace. What was it? Because Jace is a non-creature.
Yeah, but it has to be an artifact, too. Like, that's part of it.
You'd have to Mycosynthalatis him.
Yeah.
Hold on a second. Yeah, blah, 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 blah. Here we go again. Back into this thing.
Curse you, Diggleberg!
I think you've mentioned things like that before, and I never knew what the hell you were talking about. Like, because I talked about Bludgeon Brawl before, I know, and you were like, Jace, and I'm like, okay, Calvin.
Wait. because that's the thing about this card. I always end up getting, like I said, right before I made that statement, I always end up getting the stupid rules text mixed up. Like, that's the main reason why I've never really enjoyed this card.
You're right, Calvin. If you play Mycosynthalatus, you turn Jace into an artifact, and then if you play Bludgeon Brawl, you can pick Jace up by his boots and start smacking people with him. Mm-hmm. Unless, of course, you instead of Jace, you play Gideon, because you could then pick up Gideon by his boots, but then Gideon would turn into a creature and, like, swat you away and go off to beat stuff on his own. So this is the kind of rules headaches you get with Bludgeon Brawl.
Yeah. But still, like, all in all, it's, like, still the main premise of, like, we are going to do this, and we turn Jace into an artifact. And all non-creature, non-equipments, our artifacts are now eligible for this, including the lands, correct?
Because
Microsynthalatus turns all the lands into artifacts as well.
It doesn't really
help.
Are going to give you plus X plus O, which means I can hit you with a mountain, do nothing. But I can grab Jace by his feet and smack you for four.
Yeah.
I told you, it's because his ego weighs more than the mountain does.
And he's made of metal now. I mean, he is basically like Colossus, you know, going...
So, like, a mountain, like a metal mountain does not equal, like, metal Jace? Actually, you know what? Like, Eric, just go ahead.
I'm good. Yeah, what?
I wasn't saying anything. I was laughing at you two.
Yes,
I am. But, yeah, no. I think Bludgeon Brawl works by creating a space-time paradox. That's what I'm going to say. That's the only way I can keep the flavor of this card straight.
you just take a Sentinel Flute and you hit people with it. That's all it is. I mean, it's not that complicated, guys. You just have a guy walking in with all sorts of shit strapped to him, like some sort of, like, 90s, you know, kid cartoon.
Oh, like one of those, like, street peddlers from, like, the Coming to America movie. He just opens up his, like, jacket, and there's just, like, toothbrushes and, like, hair blow dryers all attached to him. You're like, that's not a weapon. Like, yeah, technically.
Yeah.
Technically it's not, but he's found a way to beat you over the head with, shaving equipment.
I always thought that they kind of tied the whole thing together, like, all the mana rocks, like, get pushed into one, like, bag, and you just hit them with the bag. it's like a sock ball cord.
I was going to say, I feel like I can make a bunch of Crocodile Dundee jokes here or something. Like, that's not a knife. This is a knife.
Yeah.
Except it would be like, that's not a knife. This is a insert artifact here. Yeah, but, like, in terms of thumbs up or thumbs down, like, this card is this in 90% of decks. This card's gonna be garbage.
Yeah.
But like if build around it, it seems like it could you say it could hold its own. And not only that, it's super fun and funny. Like this is one of those cards that like it's gonna put a smile on someone's face when you see it played against you.
You'd be surprised people's look on their face when like I'll have my Academy Rector die and go get Bludgeon Brawl. Just like,
oh, where, you tuned in for it.
Yeah, where am I? Hey, man, they'll turn around and get a Mirren Crusader for like 13 or 14 the next turn because of it. So, just saying. I mean, it's a good card. It's just funny. Like, yeah, like the reactions are really funny. Like, what really? I remember seeing opening the Cinepak of New Phyrexia and getting pissed off. You know.
I will say that this was the New Phyrexia card that haunted me. New Phyrexia was the set that I kind of got back into Magic on,
mm-hmm.
and every time I'd go to a draft, I'd open it up and friggin' like one of the three packs every time would be Bludgeon Brawl.
Exactly.
I'd just be like, and I'd just take it. I'd be like, I don't even care. I'm collecting them now.
Yeah. I got a collection.
Alright, so Eric, you ready to judge this beast? Thumbs up or
yeah,
thumbs down?
I'm giving it a thumbs up. I like this.
Sorry.
I like this card. I like the reactions you'd get out of people when you play it, which I think is half the fun of EDH.
Yeah.
I like the fact that it's a card that you have to build, you have to work with it a bit, but if you can work with it, it becomes good.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the fact that it is a red 3-cost enchantment. I think that it's got a nice cost for what it does. I like this thing.
Yeah. just like any red card that has the word random or happens to just do crazy, weird things, I can fully understand that. Me personally, I really, really hate this card.
That's funny.
I'm just gonna say, I'm just gonna give this thing a thumbs down. Maybe, someday, I might think about it. But that day is not today, sir. And I'm pretty sure it won't be tomorrow either.
Never since humility has a card caused so many rules headaches.
Yeah, I'll stand by that card forever. Just saying, like, definitely huge thumbs up. I love playing it in Boros. It's probably actually, man, it kills so many people. You have no idea how brutal it is when they're like, oh, you have a lot of mana racks. Oh, fuck, you're giving your guy, like, plus 9, plus 0, and you're not using any of your lands. You know, you're just tapping all the mana racks anyways. Like, oh, yeah, Sol Ring. That's fine, +1, +0, I still get to use the Sol Ring. It's just making my guy that much better. So, yeah, definitely big thumbs up for me. Yeah.
All
right. I'm picturing
All right, so that takes care of this segment, right, boys?
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's it. That's the show. So now it's time for us to go into the outro. Right.
We've only got the outro left. We're going to make it, Calvin.
We're going to make it. Push, baby, push. Give it to me. Okay, everybody. This is Season 10, the finale. I would like to thank you guys for listening. I would like to thank my guests for coming out. Cassidy, Eric. Wish us. You know what? Since this is Cassidy's, like, quote-unquote, first time back here during this season, why don't we let you go first? Plug whatever you're going to plug and toss out names and various things and how people can contact you and stuff.
Okay. Probably the biggest thing I want to plug is my book, because that was a lot of love, and the more copies I sell, the easier I can put out all the sequels and stuff. And you could just go to www.sun-snuff.com and pick up a copy, either Kindle or they'll send it to you, the Amazon service I use. You know, there's always the articles at TCG Player. I'm still writing those every week. The store is opening. I don't know how many people I'm going to be reaching in the Chicagoland area. Hopefully a few. I definitely want to do a lot of EDH type things, and we're probably going to need some community support, because we're kind of skin and teeth when it comes to the money, as opposed to how we thought we'd be doing. So it's kind of like help. Anyways, I'm at Right or Wrong on Twitter. You can Facebook me if you like, because I really don't like the 140 characters on Twitter. And, no off-color cast, so I don't have to mention that. So, all right. Thanks for having me on, Calvin. It was fun.
All right, Eric, so come on. Send us your outro point here. Ways to get in contact with you. Anything you want to mention about next season?
Oh, absolutely. You guys can find me on the site, CommanderCast.com. Not for the next 3 weeks, because we're going to be taking a little vacation. But you can still get in contact with me on email at ericbonvie@gmail.com or on Twitter at @thatbonvieguy. It's B-O-N-V-I-E guy. I was going to say, but next season, like, come back. I'm still writing articles next season. Vexing Devil's Advocate is coming to a close, because I felt like I've kind of got a plan for where I'm going with my article series, and Vexing Devil's Advocate kind of reached the end of its rope. I had a lot of fun with it. People really enjoyed it, and I was going to cut out while it was still on top. And next season, I've got a new series where I'm going to be talking about some basic tenets and strategies you can use to drastically upgrade any EDH deck that you want to make, instead of just trying to, like, there's a lot of columns I found on the internet that are taking, like, certain decks and telling you what cards you can put in and what cards you can take out and that kind of thing. I just wanted to build, like, just a little Bible of commandments you can follow in order to build a competitive EDH deck. The series is going to be called Up Your Deck, which... Yeah, the whole family-friendly thing, I kind of pushed that a bit on the podcast. Really, I'm... I'm doing it for the kids. Anyway, and you can also catch myself and our good friend and all-around Commander Cast good guy, Noel Clausen, on a podcast next season. The first episode actually went up last week as an emergency stopgap when William's computer went down. It's called Rivals Duel, and it's going to be just a bi-weekly podcast where me and Noel get together. We talk about what's new in EDH, either in general or for us, and then we spend the rest of the podcast arguing about something. So you get to hear nerds fight on the internet. It's like Thunderdome. Two nerds enter, one nerd leaves.
So with that, time for me to do the basic Commander Cast wrap-up. So if you like what you've heard here today, right ahead, you can leave a comment down below the show, CommanderCast.com. Let's see here. You can email us, CommanderCast@gmail.com. If you want to get in contact with me personally, you can go to Twitter, @CaptainRedZone, or you can email me, CaptainRedZone@gmail.com. You can also go over to Twitter, @CommanderCast, and email us, CommanderCast@gmail.com. There's a Facebook page where you can go there, and that's usually where you find the home version. This is the point where we say shout-outs to Mr. Christian Renault and Judd for doing the various things for the home version and the Facebook page. A big shout-out to all the various contributors at CommanderCast.com. Thank you, listeners, for coming out and actually taking time for listening to this train wreck of an episode. Next season, we'll be back. So don't get used to just hearing me. Let's see here. Is there anything else that I can possibly think of before we go? No, I'm honestly completely tapped out. I'm letting you, every listener out there, know I am not Will, I am not Andy, so I'm not going to say any catchphrase that they usually throw at the end of each show. I'm sorry, that is not my thing. I'm not going there. So I will see you next season.
See you later, folks.
Was it really a train wreck? Right. It seemed all right.
No, I just like saying
that. Yeah, no, I think we did fine.
Sweet.
It's one of those things where when I've recorded with Andy, I'm so used to him saying the show was a train wreck, even though it wasn't.
Yeah.
And I'm so used to hearing Will say the show is a train wreck, even though sometimes it's not, sometimes it is. And then when we record our color cast, we're always calling that show a train wreck. So at a certain point, I can't even really tell when a fucked up show happened. So to me, every podcast is just a train wreck.
True, totally.
Guys, I thought train wreck was a good thing. Why did everyone keep saying it?
Yeah. It's so much fun to watch.